I'm president, and you're not.
Hello, hi, welcome to Taco Tuesday.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Place to go. 610. Hi, it's Steve. It's the Steve Cochran Show. It's show number 1242.
Darling, have no place to go.
At Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/ Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200. Textures and phone calls. Amber, how you doing?
I'm amazing. I feel amazing, other than my arm is sore from our flu shots.
Why do you feel amazing? Well, I mean, it's good that you feel amazing.
I was sick last week, you know, so today I woke up with no remnants of any illness.
Well, good. So that's great.
Are you feeling?
I feel fine.
You feel good?
Yeah, I feel good.
You feel pretty?
I always feel pretty. Come on.
Plus, Tuesday is so much better than Monday. I think Monday is rough.
If you're going to rank the days, I got to go Friday.
Yeah, Friday's the best day ever.
Thursday, yes. Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. I got to go in that order. Yeah.
What about Saturday?
The weekends speak for themselves. Oh,
yeah, but the Tuesday, anybody who has to get up early on a Monday can understand that Mondays just are awful.
Yeah, and again, there's days we don't get out of here until 10:30. I mean, I think you can feel our pain. Mary Vanderbilt, who got eliminated on Dancing with the Semi-Stars?
Oh, gosh. Oh, Tinashe.
Tinashe,
you know what's weird?
I thought she was going to win the whole thing.
She should have. I mean, she's really good, but nobody knows her. Mm-hmm. So and nobody knows her dancing partner Brandon either because he's new. So I think it's just a popularity contest now, and it's pretty bad. All four girls they've eliminated. None of the guys.
I saw
kind of mad
10 minutes of it last night. Maybe can we get Erin Andrews to stop yelling?
Oh man, I just fast forward on her stuff. I don't even listen to her anymore.
Well, she's very talented. She's lovely. She just needs to stop yelling.
Yeah, and she's all, yeah. It's,
is she yelling because she's excited?
Uh-huh.
I don't know because the crowd is very loud. So maybe
it's a little bit of the faux excitement. It just doesn't work.
Okay. Yeah. Nobody really cares about half these people.
Carms, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you.
Feeling good?
I feel better.
How are things at home? I worry about you at home.
Home's good.
How's the duck?
Arnold's excellent. Thank you for asking, okay. Mary. Big win on the tennis court last night. I know you guys care because, Justin and I was talking softball. I felt like I had to dial in. Took out Ted last night, Steve. 6-2, 6-3.
Big win. Oh, no kidding. Because Ted's strong.
Ted is, Ted was a little, I didn't like the focus of Ted last night. I thought he was elsewhere. Things must be going on with his family. Mm-hmm. You know, he's walking
around. Who is Ted, by the way?
Ted is probably a 53-year-old gentleman that I only know from Monday Night Tennis.
Uh huh.
But an excellent man.
But you took him out.
I had to do it to Ted.
Is Bill Leff on your team?
Bill Leff is not on my team. I have great respect for Bill Leff.
Is this doubles?
No, this is singles.
Okay, so there wouldn't be a team.
Right, but we have like a group
your
of guys.
Group.
I actually, yeah, you know, there is a big night coming up Friday night. We got the first mixed double.
Hold on, let me see if I can get there. Friday night what?
Friday night, River Trails out in Arlington Heights, Steve.
River Trails, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's going to be making the debut for mixed doubles. Me and Chelsea, the old girlfriend, we're going to give it a spin in the competitive.
Oh, no, the current girlfriend.
Yes.
What do you mean old girlfriend?
The
old,
that's a colloquialism.
He meant the,
means like the old O-L-E.
Oh, like the old ball and chain?
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, there's no downside to calling her that.
Arnold is the stuffed duck, right? I just want to make
yes. Okay, all right. That's yes. Correct, Steve.
Okay. All right, so I know Chelsea played tennis.
She was a star on the freshman team at Glenbrook North back in the day.
Oh, she's a secret weapon.
Yeah. It's a great way to break up the relationship, you know that.
Wait, the way he said that, a star on the freshman team.
Yeah, he wanted to make sure he qualified
that means
it.
She hasn't played in a really long time.
Correct. Well, we went to tennis camp this summer, which was a little bit frightening.
Oh, that's right. Your big trip you planned.
Yeah, we went up to Boyne Mountain in Michigan and played with, there was high schoolers.
How much fighting was going on?
There was a significant amount of fighting at one point, no lie.
Yeah.
It was, because we were in a competition, so one person would hit the one ball, and then you'd have to go off the court, and the next person, and then she would hit, then I would come back, and we were
like
not.
The drills.
Yeah, but we're competing against the other two.
Okay.
I hit, run up, you hit, boom, 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 boom. We weren't partnering particularly well, Steve.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, it got
and
a
you
little,
saw that as her fault?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, come on.
Meanwhile, a wild night of Monopoly at your house?
Yeah, we played Monopoly last night. Miles was very excited to play this game all weekend, and we pushed it off as far as we could, and we got to Monday to play it. And I just said, this is going to be a six-day game.
Keep six days. I started a Monopoly game in 1979 when I graduated from high school. It's not over yet.
I was trying to explain, this is how it's going to work, and then my wife, she won the game in an hour. I've never seen that happen.
Wow.
She just cleared the board. She landed on every property. She got every free parking.
Was there
she got
a cheating
every go.
System going on My, there?
Well, Miles altered Monopoly? The rules a little bit. So some of the things that would make the game a little longer, like how you know, like what the price is when you land on certain things. Like he changed it up a little. I didn't care, but. It isn't a proper Monopoly. It's like a Super Mario Brothers Monopoly, so it's a little different.
Yeah, they have a lot of
truncated
versions now.
Yeah, so it's not the
Monopoly.
Same. That's why.
So it's like the Oreo thing, where there's flavors you don't need. There's exactly. Different versions of Monopoly.
Exactly.
Our kid's stepdad went to Penn State, and so they have Penn State-opoly.
Yeah,
so it's all Penn State themed. You know,
yeah,
I
exactly.
Have Chicago-opoly.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And Miles didn't. He would land on a space, and then he would choose based on what he had in his bank. He'd say, I don't want that. And I'm like, if you don't get the property, you can't win. So I kept saying that. He'd like, I don't want that one. So he kind of paved the way for my wife because I hit the jail 17 times. I was in jail the
attorney?
Entire time. I had a bunch of...
Is there an attorney?
Only,
there should be an attorney character for...
My little piece that I was, which was... I think I just started getting a bunch of tattoos because I was like, you know, this is where I should be.
Yeah. Well, we got a
bunch of neck tattoos.
See in the exercise, yeah.
Face tattoos.
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I had a really nice night of sleep. And I'm all refreshed and ready to go.
All right, well, let's do a show. Who's up for a show? We'll come back. We'll do the top six at six. Here's today's text question. Today is National Bosses Day. 312-981-7200. The most gratuitous example of sucking up that you've seen, witnessed, or taken part in. National Bosses Day. How have you sucked up? How have you seen others do it? That type of thing. 312-981-7200.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, and for new listeners, thank you for being a new listener. If you're not listening now, please start. The top six at six is just a simple way to tell you six things that we're thinking about that are going to be in the news and things you can impress your friends that you know. Item number one, let's just go right to the Bears. Let's go live now to Carms, who's at the doctor's with Khalil Mack.
Well, he's going to be having that ankle looked at, Steve, a little bit. I'm not sure if it's today or tomorrow, but they do have to update the injury report tomorrow.
Which ankle?
It's the right ankle. We have a rolling situation.
It's not good.
No.
Now, I'd like to talk to Khalil Mack, but I can't help but notice on the monitor he's reading Highlights magazine back there in the chair behind you.
Oh, okay. Well, Khalil is a key part to the Bears.
You think?
I think that
it helps that he played the rest of the game. This happened early in the game, and he played the whole game, so at least there's
can't
some
you tape
optimism.
Tape that sucker up?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
I mean, not every game?
That's what they're probably going to end up doing if it's not a
I don't
fracture.
Think you remove the tape. Just keep taping it.
Tape it up, shoot it up, the whole thing. 79% of the plays he was out there, but... You know, the Dolphins schemed him, though, too, here. You know, we got three guys trying to block Khalil Mack.
That's what I'm concerned about, is that the Dolphins may have blueprinted how to beat the Bears' defense.
Yeah, they doubled up on him.
Yeah.
Doubled and tripled, Mary.
Man. That was Mary just got angry.
I was mad. It's like, get off of him.
Well, then the other guy's got to step up and they
I know,
get lucky,
they didn't
they
really
didn't,
seem
didn't
like
up.
They were that yeah. Open. Like, nobody's watching
they
you.
Zero
but they
it's still 11 on 11. If a double or triple happens, two or three guys have to be available.
The bottom line,
right?
It was 87 degrees. It was, they
oh,
weren't.
Oh, was it too hot to play?
Well, they were on the sun side sun.
Oh, they're
side
on the sun side of the field. Why couldn't we get a more sun block and maybe a fan?
The heat was coming off the grass, Steve. These guys were tired. Akeem Hicks was, he just wasn't having it. Did you, I mean.
Where did they party on Saturday night? That's what I want to know.
That's the thing. Dehydration.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah. These things happen.
They weren't thinking about that when they were Samba and down in Miami
it's
Beach.
It's difficult to find a late night party in Miami.
Yeah.
Next. Chance the Rapper going to have a press conference this morning at 10 a.m. at City Hall regarding, quote, the Chicago mayoral election. The inference here is that maybe he's going to run. I would say he's going to announce that he's not running.
Sources from both the Tribune and Sun-Times were quoted saying that he is not running. He's endorsing. And the candidate that he would be endorsing is Amara Enya, who's a West Side activist and educator who is was a regular on the download. She's been on this program. She is one of the 15 or 16 people who've already been in the race. She's collecting signatures. It'd be a huge, huge coup for her if Chance the Rapper today at City Hall said, "I am backing Amara Enya." She's a younger candidate, African American woman from the West Side.
She ready for the job?
She is so smart. She is so smart, and she's a progressive Democrat, and she has a lot of great things to say about some of the issues in our city, including violence. And I think, you know, it is her time to find out. So I just think that's a huge, huge thing for the Chicago mayoral race, because it could split a demographic between young and old. And that has yet to happen in Chicago politics. Usually it's by ethnic demographics, it's not by age. So if you had a young Chicago going for Amara Enya and an older Chicago going for another candidate, it could be very interesting.
10 a.m. today. Next. Paul Allen died. Paul Allen is the co-founder of Microsoft. You go back and look at a picture of Paul Allen and Bill Gates about 1981, 2, or 3. That was a long time before nerds ruled the world. These guys got turned down by everybody, and they refused to take no for an answer. IBM could have been the kings of the personal computer world. They said, no thanks. So Microsoft went out and did it themselves. Paul Allen had been dealing with cancer for 10 years and left Microsoft when he was first diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which finally took his life yesterday. Yeah, cancer doesn't care. Cancer doesn't care how much money you have. Cancer doesn't care how many great doctors you can fly to around the world, whatever experimental treatment you might be able to afford. That's why we have to keep the fight going. But a very generous guy, gave away a ton of his money. On the Seattle Supersonics, Seattle Seahawks, and the Portland Trailblazers.
He's a part owner in the Sounders FCC team, too.
That's Drew Carey's team, isn't it? I think Drew Carey owns a chunk of that team.
Microsoft, I did not know this, the original name was Micro-Soft, S-O-F-T.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
I did not.
That's funny to me for some reason, soft.
You're right about Drew Carey. Nice job.
Yeah. Not my first day. Bill Gates, by the way, has a little more money, but Paul Allen leaves $20.5 billion.
And he's one of those people that signed up to give away most of his wealth.
Yeah.
You know, he's
90%. Yeah.
Never married, no kids.
And liked really big boats. Did you ever see the yachts he had built?
Yeah.
Super yachts. Dude had boats like you wouldn't believe.
What happens to those now? They stay in the family?
Donate them to charity?
Good question. Yeah, what kind of charity?
Everyone who plays like the Trailblazers gets a boat?
The Seahawks tradition, first of all, that stadium was built just to have as much noise as possible. Mm-hmm. And then they fly the 12th flag up before the game starts and the fans go bananas. I mean, that's just a cool tradition.
Because they're the 12th man?
Because they're the 12th man.
Oh, look what you did there.
And they always have like a 12th man celebrity carrying the flag. You know, like I know Fred Couples has done it.
Is that right?
Yeah, like okay. It's always somebody like that.
Next. Bunch of political stories. Let's start with a dumb one. Senator Elizabeth Warren released her DNA analysis providing evidence of Native American heritage to the tune of being 164th Cherokee. That's on the high end. This is released 3 weeks before the election, and 3 weeks before the election, it becomes a distraction for Democrats who are a rudderless wheel at this point to begin with. Don't understand the timing. Don't understand why it had to be done now. She's trying to get a little of the loony Trump heat
The Boston Globe was investigating whether or not, and they continue to investigate whether or not she was the Native American distinction in her classification to go to Harvard. And so there's an investigation. So she did it to prove that she was Native American.
She didn't have to do it this way.
I think there was a pressure from that investigation. That's
Don't buy it.
Was it a 23andMe we did?
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with her doing that? I don't understand. I thought it was pretty powerful, though.
Weeks before the election. The Democrats are clueless. They keep spinning. And now she created a distraction.
But why is it a distraction? Because she put it on
Trump. It's a distraction because every news channel's on it. And they're not talking about candidates and talking about racism matter.
I think they're trying to show Donald Trump, and Donald Trump, which I still find ludicrous, continues to point out her ethnicity for whatever reason. And there's this idea that, you know, if you saw her tweet, she went crazy yesterday with a bunch of tweets, which was pretty awesome, you know, just at Donald Trump. And, you know, she's trying to show that he is an incompetent president.
Is that a shock to anyone?
Well, I mean, it's good to motivate a base around the fact that this is put away. I don't, you know, okay.
The base on the Democrats and the Republican side, they're plenty motivated. You got to motivate the people in the middle. And it's a distraction. Next, this is a terrible story. The Jamal Khashoggi murder is getting closer and closer to being checked off as next. The Saudi Arabian government is preparing an alternative explanation. You know alternative facts? We'll get some more. An alternative explanation for what happened to Jamal Khashoggi. 3 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago, he walked into the embassy in Turkey, the Saudi embassy in Turkey, for a meeting. He never left. And there is evidence, according to the Turkish government, that he was tortured and murdered. He died in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, if the story proves to be true, according now to sources, a botched interrogation, a potential rendition. You remember yesterday when Trump came out and said there were rogue killers? Rogue killers was from the Saudi kingdom, the Saudi government, their exact words, and that's supposedly what they're going to say today. We, you know, like, hey, we hired some people. They came in, they got a little rough. Stuff happens. There's a problem. You let this go. Any reporter anywhere in the world could be murdered. What are you going to do? You have no authority now because you didn't stand up to the Saudis.
It was quite a 48-hour turn for the president, too, from the 60-minute interview where he said there would be definitely repercussions and that this is a serious issue to yesterday's tweet saying they said they didn't do it. And that, again, is this idea of how firm we are when it comes to our foreign policy or human rights violations, how this president takes relationships he has with the leaders of these countries more important than the actual.
It's always more important
things.
To him, which is
and then the other question,
sense.
Here's the other question, too. Okay, so the interrogation went bad. He was killed. He was murdered. Why did you cut up his body? Where's his body at? Why did you just say, okay, he died during the interrogation? Why any of that? That's the next questions, right? Why did you have to cut him up? Where did you disappear his body to? Why did you have to do that?
That's one of the questions that's come up this morning. If it takes 10 days to come up with an alternative story, then why would we buy your alternative story? Here's the problem larger than just that. If you have no credibility in protecting reporters around the world, you have no credibility in protecting any of your people. Now, you can't go out and here's the sad truth. You can't go out and start World War III over this. You can't. But you can demand that the Saudis turn the people over that killed them. I guarantee they know who they are.
But it's not even World War III. It's money. There's a weapons contract that Trump referenced in 60 Minutes, and then oil. The Saudis have said, we will jack oil prices if there's any sort of boycott against our country.
I mean, he flat out said that. I just thought it was amazing. Well, did you see what they're doing for us financially? It's like, whoa.
That's the part.
Those weapons can be sold to anybody. And here's where the rubber meets the road, to use a bad cliche. Congress may finally have the stones to stand up here. We'll see. Marco Rubio, who's been sucking up to Trump, and Lindsey Graham, who's practically been saying, thank you, may I have another, have both said in the last 24 hours, this will not stand, and Congress has the ability to act as an independent third party in this. So, could be an interesting couple of days. Was that five? I got one more, don't I?
Yes, I
do. Next. Democrats raise more money than Republican opponents in 32 of the closest 45 House races, $154 million to $108 million since November of 2016. Beto, Ted Cruz's opponent in Texas, $38 million in the last quarter, an all-time record for a Senate race. They, by the way, have gotten a smaller venue for the Ted Cruz-Donald Trump rally in Texas. Republican enthusiasm, or maybe people just don't like Ted. He still holds a 9-point lead in the latest poll. And that's your Top 6 at 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Kid of the Week. Good stories, good news about good kids. Maybe it's your kid. Maybe it's a neighbor kid. Maybe it's a kid you heard about that you think we ought to know about. We want good news stories about good kids so we can talk about them on Kid of the Week. And let's go live down to Sandberg, who feels great today, to tell us how you can enter your kid.
If you go to WGNradio.com, you can go /contest or just search Kid of the Week and you can enter your kid. And your kid can be up to 18 years old, so... When we say kid, we mean also the older kids, too.
And coming soon, Disappointing Adult of the Week.
Yes.
Because if you're over 18, there's much more of a chance. That's probably where we're going to go. Giovanni Rago's on the phone. This morning's Kid of the Week. Good morning, G.
Hi.
Can I call you G? Can I call you G?
Yeah.
Is that your nickname?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Giovanni, how old are you?
I am 10 years old.
Okay. And where do you go to school?
Winston Churchill Elementary in Schaumburg.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because I have a special needs brother who's going to be 60 years old. Can you imagine being 60 years old, Giovanni? Can you imagine being that old? He's going to be 60 years old soon, and he's my hero. And you work with special needs grown-ups. How'd you get involved? How'd you get involved in that?
Well, when I was four, we went to Misericordia in Chicago for the first time. Uh-huh. And since then, I've really loved working with special needs. And it's showing a lot that we're not different. We're just unique in different ways.
That's all you need. That's all you need. There's nothing else that can be said on the show today as important as that sentence. Yeah. There's nothing you're going to hear between now and 10 that's as good as what you just said. I'm proud of you, Giovanni.
Thank you.
It's a very cool thing. And when you go to this camp, what's the name of the camp you work with in the summertime?
Camp Daniel.
And when you go to this camp, what do you do with the folks at the camp?
Well, we do a lot of things. We worship, we play, we create, we eat, we all do this together, and we all have a lot of fun doing it, and it's a pleasure to work with them.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
No, I don't.
Well, there's no way they could compete with you. That's probably why the only child.
His parents, they probably knew they had a
winner.
A gold star here with Giovanni.
Let's just stop here. We got a winner. What do you want to be when you grow up?
That's still a question.
Well, we're going to need an answer. This segment can't last forever.
What about running for mayor? Any thoughts on that?
Exactly.
Nope.
No politics.
Hey, Giovanni, are you in fifth grade?
Yes, I am.
Have you started doing any homework yet?
Yes.
How's that going?
It's going good.
Are your grades pretty good?
Yeah.
I mean, in general, fifth grade's the first heavy homework year, right?
Yeah, that's usually when you start. Yeah. Reading, you got to do a lot of reading.
Yeah.
Usually the big
thing.
All right, well, let's narrow it down. What do you think you want to be when you grow up? Let's just get into an area.
I want to be a teacher.
A teacher?
A teacher.
That's great. I bet you'd be a great teacher.
That's good.
Do you like pizza?
Yes, I do.
All right, I'm going to give you a pizza. Do you have, what are you using for earbuds now? You got something good or you want some new ones?
Well, no, not really.
Not really? You've got good ones or not really you don't have them?
Well, in between, really.
All right, so I'm going to give you an App gift card. App is this big electronics store that your parents have probably been to and they can take in. You can get something cool for you.
Yeah, and if you don't want anything for yourself, you can always help get your mom a new Bosch dishwasher or something.
Or you could buy something for yourself.
Yeah, just saying.
Yeah.
Hey, Giovanni, do you do anything besides helping out at with the special needs adults? Do you do anything for fun?
Well, yes, I like to swim and I'm in a band and I play trumpet.
Ah, trumpet.
Who's your favorite trumpeter?
Miles Davis.
Yeah, right on.
Dude.
I mean, he's your soulmate right here.
That's my little buddy right here.
We'll introduce you to some of the fusion stuff when you get a little older.
It's tremendous. You're an amazing young man, and I'm happy to have you on the show. Thanks for being a great kid of the week.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Hold on, okay?
Thank you.
How about that kid?
I mean, that's impressive.
Come on.
You might have to start a thing, the greatest kid of all the kids. That was real strong.
That's a finalist for Kid of the Year. Yeah,
that was new level.
Pitting amazing kids against each other.
Yeah, that's our favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Where do we tell Andrea, though, even though she's doing her own show now, she still has to pick Kid of the Year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put the pressure on her.
Is there that's the idea, that you pick Kid of the Year?
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Tough.
She didn't do it. It was me and Dave.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good point. Thank you for volunteering again.
No.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
6:54 now. Governor Rauner was in yesterday in studio. J.B. Pritzker invited and has been invited again and is not returning our phone calls. Governor Rauner, amongst the questions yesterday that I asked him to answer and we kicked around was, how's it going to be different next time?
I have two things that I would do differently. One is to focus very much on lots of baby step improvements and announcing them, playing them up more than we've done. That would number one. And number two, I would have been much more focused with my time on communications. I spent my time doing, not communicating. I would do far more on communicating.
The way that the system works now in the state of Illinois, flat tax, does cause inequities where you'll have people who are earners who are making more money are not paying, quote-unquote, their fair share.
The states around us are flattening their taxes and lowering their taxes. businesses, and they're growing much faster than us, and they're running budget surpluses. The key for Illinois is to get on the positive cycle where economic growth is faster than government spending growth. We're attracting businesses at such a rate that we don't have to raise taxes. In fact, we can lower taxes and still run budget surpluses. This is happening in Texas. It's Tennessee, Indiana, Wisconsin. The idea that, well, let's solve our budget problem and get more fairness by raising the income tax. You could look at the states who've done it. New Jersey, Connecticut, there's a long list. They can't balance their budgets. And it's because you haven't taken on the structural reasons for the imbalance between economic growth and government growth.
You said that there is a shift in the sands in Springfield and that Madigan doesn't have the same power base he had before. How does that change the world?
When the members of the General Assembly and the Democratic Caucus can vote their conscience more than what they're voting the directive from their boss, many good things will happen. And
so you believe you can get more legislation through the House?
Absolutely. No question in my mind. I'm spending a lot of time with members of the General Assembly, and they know in private they agree with most of what I'm trying to do. They know we need it. It's not. They know that taxing isn't going to solve the problem, and we need to change. Change is scary. Certain special interest groups don't like it, but they're willing to stand up, I think, more and more to the Speaker.
How are you going to work with the city better, whoever the new mayor is? Because you and Rahm Emanuel were friends,
yeah,
business partners in certain ways before he won the mayor's office, and then not so much.
Yeah.
I believe for the state to operate effectively, the governor's office and the mayor's office in Chicago have to work together. What are you going to do?
Yeah, so you're right. I was longtime friends with the mayor. I'm still fond of him. I'm disappointed in some of his decisions. And frankly, when he got in trouble with the McDonald video, and really after that, he was a different place. He just was not the same. And reforms kind of went out the window after that. So that made it tough for me. And so we got at odds on some key points. I'm excited about the mayoral race. I look forward to working with the new mayor. Many of the
clean
candidates,
slate,
absolutely, and many of the candidates I know very well, and I like them quite a bit.
Sometimes you're guilty by association, party wise. If somebody's not pleased with, say, the president, then if you fall in line, you know, are associated with that party, you get thrown out with the bathwater. You know, there.
Sure.
So
that's just part of it. That's true.
I struggle trying to, when I explain to people, go out and vote, but I need more than that. I need a.
Yeah, why does the vote matter?
Why does it matter? Yeah.
Oh, boy, every vote matters. I mean, these elections tend to be very, very narrowly decided, and every citizen's vote is critically important. The reality is our nation's been divided, I think, in large part because of the gerrymandering that's gone on across the country. Each party has done it. This is not one side or the other, and it's corroded our democracy, because if a district is drawn really for only Republicans or only Democrats, which has happened devastatingly in Illinois and around the country,
right,
then only the most radical members of that party can win the primary, and then whoever wins the primary wins the general, because the other party can't even play in that district, and so you get radicalized parties. That's happened across the country.
How do you overcome the fact that there are different, that the party seems to be split in this election?
Well, I strongly believe this election will not be about conservative versus liberal or R versus D. This is about the people against a very, very broken political system that's dominant. It's run by one individual. It's funded by my opponent. And that system has clearly failed us for 35 years. And I hope and believe when people go into the polling booth, they'll understand that voting for my opponent means going back to the same policies that got us into this mess. Even though we haven't got as enough done as I want or most anybody in the state wants, what we can't do is give up. We can't give up and just, hey, let's just raise taxes. Let's have $11 billion in new spending. And if we get gerrymandered districts again with the speaker in 2 years, oh, well. No, don't give up. Let's never back down. Let's work hard together and keep working for change.
National Bosses Day today. That's the boss, at least for a few more weeks, unless you get out and vote. You got to go out and vote. Got to go out and vote. Whether you like Round or Pritzker, whatever. You got to vote November 6th. National Bosses Day, the text question of the day, sucking up. It's National Bosses Day, the most gratuitous example of it from you, from something you saw. Text us 312-981-7200. Ryan Noble's coming up. News next, 720 WGN, live from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
711-312-981-7200. My friend Ryan Noble's from CNN in just a second. I want to play a couple clips here for you quickly. The President of the United States, you may know him as Donald Trump, offered Elizabeth Warren $1 million.
I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian, you know. And let's see what she does, right? I have a feeling she will say no, but we'll hold that for the debates. Do me a favor, keep it within this room, because I don't want to give away any secrets. And the press is very honorable. They won't. Please don't tell her what I just said.
And because he's such an honorable guy, yesterday when Elizabeth Warren announced her test, that not only did she take it, she was DNA proven to be 164th Cherokee, of course the president came through.
Who cares?
Mr. President, you said you paid $1 million for Cherokee.
I didn't say that. No. I didn't. You better read it again.
Doesn't get any better. Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. Between that and, hey, Leslie, I'm the president and you're not. What a guy. What a guy.
Also not a baby. Let's be clear about that as well.
He's not a baby. All right, let's talk about what matters here right away, and that's Khashoggi and the Saudi Arabian story. What's the update this morning from CNN?
Well, it seems as though, you know, the Saudis at some point are going to admit some sort of responsibility. Exactly what that responsibility will entail remains to be seen. They could describe it as an interrogation gone wrong. But it really changes the dynamic, I think, a lot in this relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia, and particularly the thing to look for here is how President Trump responds to that over the coming weeks. I think the president believes his foreign policy victories has been the way that he's forged this relationship, particularly with the crown prince there, who's the future leader and is thought to be progressive, at least by Saudi Arabia standards. And, you know, this obviously complicates that. You've seen allies around the country pull out of this Davos in the desert financial planning event that they have in Saudi Arabia. And it seems as though Saudi Arabia is becoming increasingly isolated. And if Saudi Arabia becomes increasingly isolated, that really complicates all these other big foreign policy matters like Iran and others. So it's going to be very, very important to see how the president responds to this over the coming days. And he seems to be judging this, as he always does, on a transactional framework. You know, he sees the arms deals that we have with Saudi Arabia and thinks that that's more important than someone's life, which I think, you know, is probably part of why the president's being so criticized by how he's responding to this.
Right, because we can sell arms to anybody, and if you allow this creep, Kid King, to get away with this, then what would stop Putin or anybody else wanting to do the same thing? Now, having said that, Congress may have grown a spine overnight because Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio and others and said this will not stand. What are we going to hear from them today?
Well, I mean, isn't this kind of how this always plays out, Steve, right? Like these Republicans in the Senate that maybe were at one time never Trumpers and have now tried to have it both ways, mm-hmm. come out and say something very forceful, and it seems as though they're going to take some sort of serious action, and then when push comes to shove and they're actually put into a position to actually do something substantive, nothing comes of it.
Yeah, the theme song is wah, wah, wah.
Right, exactly. I mean, maybe the dynamics of this are different because the stakes are so high, and you know, you do have some foreign policy hawks like Rubio and Bob Corker and others who probably have never really trusted the Saudis. But, I mean, the calculation with Saudi Arabia is so delicate. The relationship with the United States is in part what kind of keeps this fragile region of the world peaceful. And even though, I mean, there's a huge argument to be made that the Saudis may be as corrupt as any regime in that region. And, oh, by the way, the vast majority of the 9/11 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia.
Right.
We've always kind of had this, have put our blinders on with Saudi Arabia because of how much oil they support the world with, because of how much they hate Iran, and that helps our long-term foreign policy goals. So even when these members of Congress kind of rattle their swords, I think the real thing we need to look for is, does it actually lead to anything substantive? And at this point, there's no indication that that's, at least in the offing.
Ryan, doesn't it? It's interesting because we've seen this a lot just with in the last couple months about rogue states and this sort of lawlessness around the world. Is there an issue or a worry that precedent is set here? If you don't go to Saudi Arabia and say this is unacceptable, but this will lead to other countries with other regimes being able to do whatever they want to do to citizens?
Oh, absolutely, Justin. I mean, I think that's why everybody's so concerned. You know, I had a friend of mine texted me, and I think when, you know, a lot of Americans who don't necessarily listen or read and are educated as to how the foreign policy dynamics work, you know, look at this at a very visceral level and say, well, this guy wasn't even an American citizen. Like, what does it matter? Why do we need to destroy a relationship with an ally because of somebody that wasn't even an American citizen? And to your point, Justin, it's so much more than that, right? Like, first of all, he worked for an American media outlet. He lived in the United States. He had deep ties to America.
Yeah, he was a green card holder.
Exactly. And there's no belief in any way, shape, or form that he had done anything illegal. The only thing he had done was speak out against a totalitarian regime, which I thought that's what the United States stood for and, you know, defended people who did such. So your point is exactly right. If you allow something like this to happen by someone who you consider to be an ally, how does that prevent the rogue states who you don't have a good relationship from doing the same exact thing, kidnapping American journalists all over the world and killing them because of what they call interrogations gone wrong? It sets a very dangerous precedent. And if you let your friends get away with it, there's no reason that your enemies won't do it tenfold.
And CNN, has CNN issued anything in-house with you guys?
In terms of our security?
Yeah, security protection.
No, I mean,
you think about Arwa Damon, and Arwa Damon, who's right. been so brave in Syria forever, and I'm sorry, I'm spacing on your man in North Korea, who's been in and out 16, 18, 20
Will
times.
Will Ripley, yeah.
Will Ripley.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these people, I mean, how do they go back?
Well, I mean, I couldn't talk about it if we had, first of all, but
you can
tell me,
it's just you and me. I mean, you could tell me.
You know, I mean, I would just say this broadly, that in terms of how our company handles security at every single level is, I think, one of the most important aspects of working for a company like CNN. And, you know, those reporters that you're talking about take every precaution possible to make sure that they can get the story back to the people that need to hear it, but at the same time do it in a safe way. But listen, I don't think that anybody's under a mistaken reality that when you go to report on these tough stories in this current environment in the world, that you're not putting yourself at some sort of risk. And I think that's why, as a journalist and someone who, you know, very rarely has to put myself in harm's way to do my style of reporting, when I see what my colleagues do all around the world, and then you hear somebody like the president call us fake news, I think that's one of the things that you know, it really hits you in a hard way, because I don't think people understand just the links that some of my colleagues
sure.
have gone to report stories.
Sure.
I mean, I've got photographers that I work with on a regular basis. David Albritton, who's one of our photographers in New York, who's been blown up on two different occasions reporting from war zones, has a huge scar in his arm from dealing with that. So, yeah, this is something that our people know what they're getting into, but at the same time, they're going to take every necessary precaution so they can get the story back to the rest of the world.
Samber?
So it's not exactly the same thing as this, but, you know, Anthony Bourdain did interviews in countries where with journalists that didn't always have a lot of protection either. And we were just watching last night one of the gentlemen was a reporter in Iran. He's Iranian and American, and he was working there, and he did an interview with Bourdain in Iran when he came to Iran.
Yeah,
and it's mostly
yeah.
about culture and food and things like that. And like 6 weeks after the television crew left, he was interrogated, and then he was jailed for 544 days for supposedly talking out of turn, you know.
And that's what we're talking about here, right? Because the next step up from that is you sit down with Ryan Nobles in a foreign country. The minute you leave, I'm going to punish you. The next time Ryan Nobles comes in, we're going to take Ryan Nobles as well.
Right. So that's it's like.
Are you cool with that, Ryan?
No, but, you know, I think, guys, the point here is, I think Americans are often, you know, we take for granted how important the freedom of the press is, and how, you know, it's not just me reporting the news, it's you, you know, putting a flyer up in your neighborhood community center, or, you know, going to the church that you want to go to. These are all freedoms that we absolutely take for granted on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's why this particular story resonates. It's because here's someone who lived the lifestyle that we all live in the United States, may not have been a citizen, but was a green card holder and a permanent resident, and in the blink of an eye went into a room that he shouldn't have gone into under false assumptions and was dead within a couple of hours. And I think that's what's so scary about how the rest of the world treats situations like this and how we need to be fully cognizant of that.
All right, before we let you go, you were in Florida, completely different topic here, but obviously it's hard for us to understand how bad it is just by looking at the pictures. We can't allow this to be a story that just goes to the back pages now. What do they need? Is it as simple as help the Red Cross if you choose to, or what else can we do?
I mean, as always, in these situations, if you're sitting at home, they don't necessarily need you to send them bottles of water or teddy bears or anything like that. What they need is cold, hard cash. And so find the charity that you trust and donate. You know, it's called CNN Impact on the CNN.com website where you can donate and provide resources in that respect. But, you know, I was in Tallahassee, which is about 30 miles from the coast. They thought that the Category 4I was going to nail Tallahassee, which would have been devastating because of the population there is a lot more concentrated than it is down on the coast. We got lucky because the eye kind of scooted around to us to the west. But, man, in Mexico Beach, Panama City, I mean, there are some school districts down there where there's 58 schools in the county and 22 of them have been completely destroyed. Done. I mean, just imagine that if you've got school-age children.
Well, they're talking about double shifts, right? They're talking about double shifts in buildings where they're going to have to split kids up. Some kids are going to go from 3 to 10 o'clock at night or something.
Right. I mean, that's the only way that they can do it. I mean, it could be years before this part of the country is back to normal. And, boy, to see it firsthand was just incredible. And also to kind of see the resiliency of the people there, you know, walking around Tallahassee with huge trees, you know, crossing and blocking streets and, you know, going through the roofs of houses. And they just kind of, you know, throw their hands up and say, well, we'll just rebuild and get back to normal. It's absolutely incredible.
And that's
We should definitely keep those people in our thoughts.
Yeah, the money, you know, things I've been seeing on Facebook, things you don't even think about, trees moving services, people are going down there to help, but they need places to stay because they're going to be down there for weeks.
Just a room.
Like, things you don't think about.
Drive their truck down, bring their gear, put them up.
Right, put them up for...
Yeah. Right, and there aren't even buildings for them to stay in. It's like Mexico Beach. You know, 75% of the homes were destroyed. So,
by the way, there's one mansion on the beach at Mexico Beach, which a doctor built, which is an amazing picture. It's a huge home, and he built it to withstand a 200 mile an hour wind, and it did. But it's crazy because it looks like a bomb took out everything but that house, which is largely unscathed. And again, there's a rich guy who still has his house who said, "Look, FEMA wants it. Take it. Take it for weeks. Do what you need to do. Live there, help everybody you can." So everybody's helping everybody, and that's what you hope. That's the best of America.
Right, and not to get, I have a cold calculus about this, but huge political implications as well, because the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, who's running for the Senate, he's probably not going to campaign at all for the rest of the election because he's solely focused on hurricane recovery. And Andrew Gillum, who's a rising Democratic star, the mayor of Tallahassee, so his city was hit pretty hard. He has also has not been campaigning as well. This has massive, I mean, it basically turned two incredibly tight races in the Senate and the governor's race upside down. And voters respond to this when they see their leaders take care of them during times of storm. You may not, even if you don't live in the panhandle, people in Miami are paying attention to that. And that could affect everybody across the country because it could have a big impact on who controls the Senate in November.
Sure. Wow. Appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks. Appreciate it.
That's Ryan Nobles, juggling the kids at home and talking about everything else in the world.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
A Halloween-tinged most valuable person on the planet?
Ooh.
Right. Ooh, I think ooh is the word you're looking for.
Right? I'm feeling it.
Todd Cameron is standing by on the phone. Todd, I've just looked at some photos, which I'll never be able to get out of my head again, and I blame you.
I'll take that.
Todd is from British Columbia, and your wife, is your wife in labor or close to it?
She's any day. Tomorrow is our due date, so it could be in half an hour, it could be in a couple days, or just playing the waiting game, Steve.
First baby?
I actually have an 18-year-old daughter named Raven, and this is her first baby. So,
how in God's name did you talk?
His wife's name's Nicole. Just
yeah, and how did you get Nicole to agree to a photo shoot where, you know, this isn't spoiler alert stuff. It's been viral for 24 hours now.
Oh, yeah.
But the agree to a photo shoot where the alien baby is born from your wife's womb. You sick, sick man.
You know what? It's been pretty hilarious. Well, what happened was she'd been mentioning over the summertime as the baby got bigger and bigger just how crazy it is, something that men will never experience, how crazy it is to have something, another human living inside you, and how it's, you know, poking and prodding with his elbows and feet, and how it felt like a baby alien inside of her trying to get out. And she also mentioned by chance that she wasn't interested in doing maternity shots. She's like, I'm not, some people may be into that, but, you know, I'm like bloated and puffy and not very glamorous. So power to people that want to do that, fine. But she's just not into it. And she's like, I'm not sure where I put those pictures. If I hang them in my house, it's kind of bizarre. So she's like, I wasn't into doing that. So those two things kind of came together, and then when I was doing some garage sale shopping in my town here in Nanaimo,
uh-huh,
over the summer, I came across chest burster alien model, full size model that I had to put together and paint. And when I was doing that, the wheels just started slowly, maniacally forming in my head.
Right, those are the wheels you need to not listen to. No. Those are the wheels you need to oil.
Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, this woman must really, really love you.
She does, and vice versa. But, you know, to be honest, we're both actually huge fans of Halloween. We met at my work at the Oxy Pub here in Nanaimo, and she limped into my bar. I'm post-karaoke there, and she limped in. The first time I saw her, she was had a full like movie quality zombie makeup her friend had done, and her neck was she had blood capsules in her neck, so there were.
Oh, you guys are perfect for each other.
I poked her on the shoulder, and she turned around, and she actually spit blood.
Oh, how sweet!
That's something you can
tell the baby.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it was. Yeah, we're really excited to share the story when the little one's old enough.
Well, look, here's the deal, Todd, because we're going to run out of time here, and I want to make sure that the authorities know where you are, so we've got another line working. But these pictures can be best described by saying they can't be best described. You got to see them. And Sandberg,
it's a pregnancy photo shoot, and then during the photo shoot, an alien is born out of his wife's belly, and there is blood and things. Yeah.
Right, the classic alien scene,
the alien tries to make a run for it, and he chases it. That's a photographed as well. And then they're seen swaddling the alien after, covered in blood.
That's so wrong. It's
all in a pumpkin patch.
Well, the message there is, you know, no matter how your kids come out, you have to love them regardless.
Oh, is that the message?
Oh, that's...
Look at you, performance artist.
Then why not?
Congratulations on the baby. Please don't show that child any of these pictures ever.
Deal.
All right, dude, hold on. There you go. Well, he's a funny guy. I mean, it sounds like they're perfect for each other.
That does.
That's
yeah.
It's a great story that he tells through the photos that he and his wife tell. And I'm very.
It's interesting. It's your definition of great is a little off.
I think it's great. They're both sci-fi fans. They're both alien fans. They did a joke photo shoot. It deserves to go viral. It's very well done.
Yeah.
I always wonder
where people put those pregnancy photo shoot photos besides Facebook.
Well, don't you wonder, too, for the people that try to go viral with something wacky like that? It doesn't catch on?
Yeah.
How's your day?
Yeah.
Todd Cameron and his wife, Nicole. Thank God they found each other. And did we post that somewhere to help people find it?
Oh, yeah. We'll put it on WGN Radio.
Seems like a good idea.
Our Steve Cochran Show Facebook page.
And again, if you're wondering, that was Pete Zimmerman's idea.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Science. The study of our natural world through observation and experiment.
Why do humans cry so much?
Dogs, dogs, dogs. It seems like everywhere you look, someone is talking about dogs.
Science, science, science. Science with Sophie. It's funny. She's funny.
We've all got
it's fun. It's not just for girls. Come on, Carms, you can watch too.
I love science, Steve.
Do you like STEM?
Big time STEM guy.
Yeah.
We're talking about STEM cells. What are we talking here?
Science, tech.
Engineering and math.
Engineering and math.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Right.
Do you know science with Sophie? Let me introduce you right now. Sophie joins us on the phone. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Thank you for the work you're doing. I think it's very important. And you're a whack job.
Thanks. Those are the best compliments I could receive this morning.
All right. So let's cut right to the chase. 2 weeks ago, or is it a week ago? A week ago, we get a prediction. We got about 22 years and the Earth's out of business. We need you to fix this.
I'm on it. I'm on the case. It's kind of scary stuff. I'll admit I'm a little intimidated by it, too, right?
Yeah, I would think. And to be somebody that kids go to for science information, do you feel any special pressure to try to, you know, up your climate change game?
You know, it's part of my goal anyway, because I have been, this has been on my radar as a scientist for a while. So I'm glad we're talking about it. There are things we can do. So I like to talk, when I talk to kids and adults about it, to talk about all the things you can do individually, because it can be kind of overwhelming, right? It can seem like too big a problem for one person to solve. But yeah, there are lots of things we can do.
Yeah, and Sophie, Justin here on the show, he told us all we should get off beef and just eat beans. And yes. It was like so radical.
I would do it. I think
we wanted to go straight to the solution because he had a 16-inch softball game.
I read a piece about and Orion. We talked to Orion Samuelson about the idea that a lot of the carbon emissions and the emissions in this planet, a third of our planet is dedicated to animal production, and that's a big chunk. So if you actually got people off of beef and onto beans, the same protein involved, you would solve climate.
You're 1,000% right, and it 1,000% isn't going to happen.
Yeah, well, no.
That's the problem.
What's your idea?
Sophie, you're right.
Sophie on YouTube is killing it with Science with Sophie. So aside from climate change, let's back this down now to kind of the core of the work you do every day. It's not just girls. We want kids more involved with science. How's business?
Going well. We're in production for season 2. We just crowdfunded a second time, so we raised money from our community to make the season. And we're in production, and we're going to be releasing episodes really soon.
Sandberg and Justin here, they both have kids who are... how old are the kids?
My kids are 14, 11. Justin has an 11-year-old.
Yeah. So, home run zone for you?
Yeah. You know, reaching kids as young as possible is really important to me, because by age 6, girls believe that boys are more smart than girls. It's a really crazy research study that was recently done. But you're absolutely right that it's not just girls. It's for boys as well, because we're all part of this scientific mindset change. So then growing with students throughout that age range is really important to me. So 11 years old, 14 years old, awesome. Yes, there's so much you can find in the show. And as an adult, too, there are some things that I hope you find funny as well.
I think the most popular adult video, if I noticed on your page, with the most views is how to remove slime from carpet.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. We recently had some slime in studio.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there you go. Absolutely. Right.
See? Yep. Science is everywhere, including on the carpet.
What a good slogan. Science is everywhere, including on the carpet.
Sophie, with back to climate change, when you have an issue like this that really, when you're trying to drill down to the individual is one thing, but when it's brought up in a larger context, it becomes political. How do you keep politics out of the science when you're trying to talk to young people?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question, because to me, science is not political, right? Science is facts. It's about observing the world around you. So it always surprised me in a way that it became politicized. Science in general, right? Science is it's just facts. So let's use those facts to our advantage so that we can progress as a society. So when I'm talking to kids about it, I really stick to that. It's like, this is science. These are the facts. And we don't really have time to debate the political stuff anymore, because with this particular topic, we need to make some changes right now. So let's just talk about what we can do.
So do you find kids are interested in what you're saying? Like, what would you, is it hard to engage?
Yeah.
Dude, she's in season
two. Oh my gosh.
She's in season two. She's obviously a huge smash hit.
I still feel there might be a couple resistant kids out there, Steve.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. Kids are so on board with the idea of that we need to change something about our world for climate change to be stopped. Kids get it. They get it immediately.
Right.
Sometimes when I'm talking to kids and I ask them what they want to talk about, they will bring up climate change on their own because they sense that it's a problem. They know that it's going to affect them. These are the kids who are going to be adults in 20 years. So they're ready to do whatever it needs to be done.
I know you use your character Mother Earth to explain some of the things. So could you explain something to us at a more basic level besides Justin's suggestion that we all get off beef and eat beans?
It's a good suggestion.
I'm on in the Justin camp, frankly, because that is a really big part of it. But Mother Earth is so she's a character who is a grandmotherly figure, and she talks about all kinds of different subjects. Let me see if I can. Do you want me to try to find her for a second?
Yeah, if you could. If she's with you now. She's with you there.
let me get. You know what, hey, Mother Earth? Do you want to? Yeah, hold on one second. Oh, hello, humanity. It's me, your Mother Earth. Hello! I haven't heard from you in so long. I'm not sure if you even remember me. I've been sitting here alone. Don't worry, I'm fine. It's just about 1.5 degrees hotter than I'm used to on average. But I've been sitting here thinking, and you know, I think that Justin has an excellent point. Thank you, Justin, my beautiful baby. You're wonderful. Because did you know that the methane produced out of those billions of butts of all of those animals and the carbon dioxide out of those billions of lungs is literally the number one cause of climate change. So I'm not saying that you got to give it up all the way, but maybe a little less meat, couple of days a week.
There you go.
Swap it out for some vegetables.
Yeah. Mother Earth, you're brilliant as always. I do wonder, however, if we put 2 or 3 trillion people on just beans, aren't we going to have a methane problem there?
Oh, what a good point. You know, always a good gas joke. But it's really not even comparable.
All right.
It's a different amount, and we're getting rid of more butts. Think about that.
Well, this is how I learned. This is how I learned, Mother Earth, through your education. Let me talk to Sophie before we run out of time. And thank you, Mother Earth. Get back to work, please.
Thank you so much.
Mother Earth and her friend Sophie. Science with Sophie. You should watch it. And I would think the greatest compliment to you would be if you are walking around on Halloween and you see some little kid dressed up like you. If it doesn't happen this year, it's going to happen any minute now.
I can't wait. I will keep my eyes peeled.
Yeah. Last word.
Last word. So give us one idea, Sophie, for kids that you tell kids or even adults that when you're facing this huge climate change report and there's nothing that we can do in 22 years, what is one thing we can do as citizens on our own and take individual responsibility?
Okay, I've got a big list. There are so many things you can do. So you can make those daily changes, like Justin said. Maybe not go cold turkey, no pun intended, but, you know, think about what you could change in your daily life. So maybe one meal, and then it goes to 2 meals and 3 meals, and that will make a difference. Vote with your dollars. So the idea that one person's vote seems so small, but if 1 million people vote, it makes a difference. Your dollars do the same thing. So choose what you buy. Are you buying something that was that is a natural food that came from the ground, right, that has a lower carbon footprint than something processed? So call your representatives, too. Kids can do that. You can call and say, I want climate change action. So it's a policy level, too, and kids can get politically active to make those climate change policies happen. And remember that these big change, these small changes add up.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond the headline.
It's like when we did recycling. We didn't do recycling, then we did recycling.
Exactly. Exactly right. Reduce, reuse, recycle, right? So recycling can make a big difference. And then reusing as well. So taking something and using it multiple times before you recycle it. And then reducing is the ultimate goal. So using less stuff to begin with is going to be really helpful. So things like straws. One thing I'm personally working on is not using straws. So at a restaurant, I try to say before the water comes out, I go, no straw. And I'm learning it too. So those simple, small things we can do every day become patterns as we start to do them more. And that's going to add up.
All right. Sophie, straws. I'm on a straw game.
Sophie, thank you. What's your website? Where would you want to send folks?
Yeah, if you go to youtube.com/sciencewithsophie, that's where you can find the show. And then because this goes beyond the headline as well, we are also going to be doing regular check-ins about things like climate change on the Facebook page. So if you go to facebook.com/sciencewithsophie, join the conversation, and we'll keep on checking in, share tips, challenges, etc.
So your YouTube page or your Facebook page, either one is great, unless they see you on the street and then feel free to grill you.
Absolutely. I love talking to everybody.
All right, Science. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the great SS Science with Sophie right there. How about that? Did you learn anything, Mark? I feel like you learned something.
I absolutely did, Steve.
Because, you know, you're not just a dumb sports guy. You're a bright guy.
That's right, Steve. I appreciate that you boiled that down so well. Thank you.
Right.
I learned that I'm on Team Justin. It makes me feel better. If I just knock out one burger, I don't have to go like totally cold turkey. Just like one less burger.
And we're only talking beef, chicken, pork. The others, those are fine.
No, I don't know. Chicken makes me guess. Oh, that's right. It's not my guess.
Yeah, it's not your guess.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
I was born in a town full of red pine trees. County sign says, follow your dreams. Westbound train makes the whole town shake. Friday night lights decide your fate.
Steve Cochran Show, 758 now, and show number 1,242. I've never seen you two sing together, you and Mark Herman.
Oh, that was a good song that Joe pulled there.
What song?
You want the name of it? I got to go through
slow
the lyrics.
Country song.
Neither one of you.
Born to Love You.
Born to Love You.
But there I was told that by Joe. But I never know the titles of songs.
Texters on Boss's Day, 608. We had a new guy show up at work. Didn't last too long. A lot of us like gardening and cooking. The boss mentioned it like pesto. The next morning, new guy brought in a 55-gallon hefty bag of basil.
Oh,
place stunned for a week.
He must grow it at his house.
815, Boss's Day, first year at the manufacturing plant. I made my plant manager an apple pie. Then I noticed that everyone else at the plant got him booze. Captain, Jack, everything else. I took some grief about that. And 708, sucking up to the boss is the best. Signed, Mike Pence.
So there you go. All right.
Boss's Day, suck up text, 312-981-7200.
We suck up to our boss. Our boss, Stephanie, is very into costumes, and so we all have to wear costumes on Halloween. I count that as a suck up.
You say that's sucking up? I say we enjoy it.
Yeah. And this year's costumes are very interesting.
Has there been a decision made on that?
There has, yep.
What are we doing?
I think Stephanie just made the decision.
What?
I don't think, are we allowed to say, isn't that the big reveal?
We're revealing.
Was I in a meeting involving this?
There was no meeting.
She made an executive decision.
Nobody liked my idea. We could be BTS, Korean pop group.
I think that flu shot I got yesterday is going to make me sick right around the time we were supposed to be dressing up.
Well, it sounds like we have another topic to add to the meeting this morning.
No, it's already been decided.
It has?
Yeah, they're already ordered.
They're already ordered, and we're...
Didn't you put your size in, Steve?
Well, petite, obviously. you guys, one last science thing before we wrap up this hour. If anybody wants to fly into space, the prices have been released now. Virgin Galactic, passenger space travel, Virgin Galactic, and get you there and get you back, upper atmosphere, outer space. Essentially, one lap, you'll be able to cross the 62-mile-high Kármán line, as it's called.
Wow.
That marks the boundary between the upper atmosphere and outer space. And the company says about 650 people already have tickets for the suborbital flights. $250,000 per person.
So you fly all the way up and you come right back?
You buzz around for a little bit.
You don't stop at, you know, Mars, Jupiter, hang out?
No, that's a longer haul.
What's the duration on that? How long does it take you? Like in real people time?
It's not long. How long will I be gone?
Yeah.
No, it's not long. You do it in a matter of, sure. Well, let's go live to space. Steve, you're in outer space.
Yes. I'm here most hours now in space.
Is there a Starbucks up there, Steve?
There's not. There's not a Starbucks yet, but that's coming. Maybe
there's
next
probably
year.
Probably a Sonic. I bet there's a Sonic up there.
Drive-through. Yes, there's a drive-through.
So how long are these flights?
I don't know.
I went to you for information,
You know, this is Branson, Richard Branson?
Yes, Branson's Virgin Galactic. $250,000 a piece.
Yeah. None of this has been approved yet, so I would get past that before I'd start worrying about when and how much this is going to cost.
Look at Steve Grzanich from regulation in there.
Yeah, no, I just think it's going to be a while before any
plus competition. Competition's going to help because Bezos rocket company Blue Origin is competing, and there's two or three others out there.
If you want to put money in a millionaire's pocket, go ahead.
You know, it's funny. That's when in reading the Paul Allen stuff from Passing Away, everything he had money in all of these science Branson, Bezos, like he put a lot of money into this.
He built a wacky plane, like the widest plane on the planet, and he was going to fly that into space. We were still developing that. So there you go. Keep $250,000 aside, and you're guaranteed a free ride to outer space. Live from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, he'll return from space to do the news next. That's Steve. He'll be here in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Welcome to Moron Entertainment. And Dean Richards live at Channel 9.
I prefer it if you call me Pocahontas.
I
only because you know that I was once part of the village people.
You were.
As the...
you were the Indian.
Indian chief.
Yeah. I believe I was the cop.
Native American chief.
So I heard you were wandering around with Snoop Dogg yesterday, and I brought this up earlier. How did they know who was who?
I also am a famous rapper. As you know, I've gone under two rap names now. Baldy D was when I first started.
Yep.
And these days I go by D Izzle.
And D Izzle and Snoop Dogg, Snoop Double D O G, because he put an extra D chilling. Up front for this.
We were just chilling yesterday.
What'd you do? Shaking did you go to Portillo's? What'd you do?
No, we were shaking and baking.
Why was Snoop in town?
He's got a play that's going to be at
the
Harry Crown Theater. It's actually, it sounds really interesting.
Is he in Tootsie? Be a good move, wouldn't it?
That would be good. I
dressed
like that.
As a woman.
he'd be an unattractive woman.
Fantastic. You know how he's super tall.
Yeah, he is very tall.
I didn't realize.
He's a good athlete.
He's like 6'4", 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
I was cowering next to him.
Well, you were just, you were in awe. You're next to Snoop Dogg.
His legs were so long, though, Dean. When I saw you guys sitting on the couch, I thought your knees were going to touch.
In my dreams.
Sounds like a moment. So what's his play?
So this play, it's called Redemption of a Dog, and it's kind of his life story of how he started off as a rapper and a gangbanger and with all the wrong things, and how through, with the help of his wife and family and faith, turned his life around and changed his life.
He's been married forever, hasn't he?
He has been married forever. You know he's a grandfather?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Snoop Dogg is a grandfather. And it's going to be
I saw him at the meeting.
Harry Crown at the rap meeting?
No, the grandfather meeting.
Oh, at the grandfather meeting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Grandfather rappers meeting.
Right.
Two shows on Saturday at the Harry Crown Theater. He's involved. He's a game show host. He's in music. He's an author.
He's got that thing with Martha. Martha Quinn. Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart, which is one of the things that we talked about, because it seems like such an odd pairing.
Mm-hmm.
But here's him talking about that.
And once I started, hanging out with her and cooking with her, she taught me some things and I taught her a few things. So our relationship is unique, it's different, it's like sister and brother, or I say like auntie and nephew.
How about that? That's something. Did you share any recipes with her?
Oh,
I'm thinking like specifically brownie recipes.
Yeah, I shared some recipes that I'll holler at you off the air. You understand me?
It's the first time ever that I've done an interview and then I had the munchies afterwards.
It's funny, too, that you slipped a weed joke in. I didn't see that coming.
Who would have ever thought to mention anything about weed with Snoop Dogg?
My favorite Snoop Dogg thing ever was seeing him talk about Willie Nelson, where he shakes his head and he goes, I can't do that. Willie's bus was too much for Snoop.
Now, you know, Steve, I like, you know, we've started this new thing now where I sniff as many of the A-listers.
Yes, how did he smell?
Well, I didn't even have to try to, like, sneak in a sniff. He was extremely herbal smelling.
Ah, well, that's a shock, isn't it?
I'll just say, when he showed up, by the way, it was like an hour late. So we had to record the interview, and it's going to be on today. And we'll share it on the Sunday show also.
Okay.
Because it's actually a really interesting interview of him talking about turning his life around and changing his life around.
Have you talked to him a lot before, Dean?
I have only talked to him one time before. I think it was the movie Soul Plane that came out. You know, and it was, you know, he
Orson Welles directed that, didn't he?
He did.
Yes, that was actually a funny movie. I liked Soul Plane.
Yeah. It is like a, just, you know, silly.
It's so silly that it was funny.
Yeah, exactly. But he smelled, let's just say, very herbal.
I don't know if it might have been
patchouli.
We were talking in off air about the fact that he's only 46 because it seems like he's been around forever.
Very true.
Were you surprised to find that he's not 50 yet?
I didn't think about it, but I did.
I thought you ID all your guests.
I usually check for tattoos, birthmarks, and scars, in addition to sniffing. I'm becoming the most inappropriate person, too.
It's not an interviewer. It's a bloodhound. Good God.
Interviewed, yeah. Steve Carell was the only one that insisted that I do it. Everyone else is a little reluctant about it.
All right, let's awkwardly shift gears to women in trouble. What's the Amy Winehouse story?
Well, Amy Winehouse, as you will remember, passed away in 2011
of
alcohol intoxication. Her father has said that people have been after him to sell the rights to her life story to make a motion picture. And father said it never felt like the right time. Well, apparently now is the right time because he did sell the rights to have a biopic made on his daughter's life. All of the proceeds will go to the Amy Winehouse Foundation that works to help others who are battling alcohol and drug addiction, as Amy did for years.
Well, that's good.
She was only 27 when she died.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about
that. Dean, did you ever watch that thing on Netflix? They have, I guess you'd call it a documentary, but it's put together mostly of all the footage she took because, you know, she did so much videoing. Yeah. It is so difficult to watch.
I did see that. Yeah, I did see that. That's it's incredibly difficult to watch. It reminds you how amazingly raw, talented she was.
And tortured.
Unrefined, but also tortured. And you could see the self-destruction coming a mile away with this. But yet,
and not surrounded by good people. Yeah, it was sad.
Yeah, nobody could do anything about it.
Not necessarily the same level of talent, but still trying to survive. And sometimes we wonder if she will. Tara Reid?
Tara Reid, who we know best these days from Sharknado, was kicked off of an airplane yesterday. She was on a Delta flight from L.A. to New York. She gets on the flight. She doesn't like her seat. She had a window seat and said that it was uncomfortable, and the person in front of her fully reclined, which is, you know, it is uncomfortable, but, you know,
nobody does that to me.
Yeah, it
doesn't happen to me.
It just happens. Anyway, she started complaining about that loudly. She started complaining about not getting a pillow loudly. I don't even remember the last time they gave people a pillow.
Well, the pillows are nasty.
For one thing, who wants to put your face on that, number one? But they haven't handed out pillows, certainly in coach where she was, in years. But she was complaining about that so much so the flight attendants came over, asked her to be quiet, tried to settle her down. That was not working. They were still on the tarmac. And the pilots turned the plane around. They kicked her off, and she had to wait to take another flight where apparently she was much quieter.
And the sad thing is that if you watch the video, she's carrying her little tiny dog off the plane with her. Like it's such a
she's just such a train wreck. On that happy note, stand by, more from Dean in just a second, including news from white boy bands and Chance the Rapper, who's not even close to that.
You'll be calling his name.
That's John DeCoss, who has another new knee. How many new knees can he get? Can he get more than two?
Well, he's got two right now.
That's probably enough.
Yeah.
Multi-knees.
He's going to be in tomorrow.
He I got two knees. One. Oh, you bought him one, Dean?
I bought him one for Christmas. Oh,
I didn't know that.
Also, one of his dogs got a new knee this year, too.
Well, maybe he can give it to his dog, then.
There's the dog can do four knees.
Oh, aren't the elbows on the front?
I don't know. We're going to need to get Dr. Sam, our vet friend, done. New kids on the block in the news. Thank God I worry about them.
A new concert has just been announced. So I told you, I think it was last week, that they were bringing a 90s tour to Chicago called the Mixtape Tour.
Sure.
New Kids on the Block.
Joey McIntyre going to be involved?
Joey McIntyre is involved in
this. How about Greg and Peter and Bobby? Are they in?
They will not be.
Tiger? Alice?
Involved. None of those.
Danny Bonaducci, is he involved?
Also not involved. Okay. But Salt and Peppa will be involved. Oh. Tiffany.
Shoop. Oop. Da. Oop.
Debbie Gibson.
What a bizarre show.
And Naughty by Nature.
Yeah.
You know OPP.
Okay. Hold on a second. Debbie Gibson.
Tiffany.
Tiffany.
Salt and Peppa.
Salt and Peppa, Naughty by Nature, and New Kids on the Block.
The New Kids.
Mixed. Your head will explode watching that show.
It's 90s.
That sounds like very odd. That's a fun. Yeah, that's just a fun,
wacky backstage.
Yeah, it's be fun.
I'll tell you, everybody that I went to high school with on Facebook, a lot of those women I know will be at that show.
Hmm.
And that was the whitest pronunciation of Peppa we've ever heard, either.
Salt and Peppa.
Peppa. Salt and Pepper.
Peppa. Salt and Pepper will be performing for us. Let's give them a marvelous round of applause.
Hey, what's Chance the Rapper doing?
Chance is holding a press conference today at 10 o'clock. I believe Steve has been reporting that this morning.
Mm-hmm. Do I have to be there?
If you'd like to.
Well, if he's going to announce something about me, I should probably be there.
Yeah. All the rapping community is getting...
Oh, well, I got to be there.
Behind you. Not only the rappers like you, but also the ones that gift wrap things.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They're all going to be behind him. So they're saying that he's may endorse someone today to be mayor of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Or he may announce himself that he's running for, that he's going to run for mayor.
He's got music. He's got that job driving Lyft cars. I don't think he has time for mayor.
I don't think he's going to announce either, because about a month ago, he was on a red carpet and I asked him if he was going to run for mayor, and he got all stumbly and, you know, the usually, like, you know, very...
Yeah, he gave you the I gotta go move.
Gave you the no comment, I gotta go. So... I don't think he is going to make that announcement that he's going to run, but apparently he will. You know, we've been waiting to hear who our entertainers think should be holding political office.
You know, what would be cool is if he endorsed Bill Daley. I would love to see the two of them campaigning together.
Wow.
Now here's my friend Chance.
His dad is a big Politico, and he's actually supporting
Chance's
Tony
dad?
Preckwinkle.
Tony
Chance's
Preckwinkle.
Dad, yeah.
Justin, you're friends with Chance's brother. Has he given you any intel?
He has not. We don't have that kind of relationship where I'm like, hey, what's up? Who's Chance going to endorse for mayor?
Huh.
I see him in the grocery store, I ran into one of my favorite, Chicago's favorite rappers in the grocery store. That's always fun.
I ran into his other brother, Skippy the Rapper.
Oh, Skippy, sure. Yeah, yeah, the white sheep of the family. Where's his press conference today?
City Hall.
At City Hall?
I think so, right? And that's what yesterday he texted.
That's what it said in the tweeted out. Yeah.
He tweeted out. It's a very formal-looking invitation to the press.
It's early for a rapper, too. I mean, you think a rapper press conference, that'd be like 4 in the afternoon.
He's a busy man.
Your stereotypical rapper.
What do you think the level of influence that Chance has on the city?
Growing. Yeah, growing. Significant and growing. Yeah.
Like, could determine the election type of influence?
How many votes? We could have a segment on this. We probably don't know anecdotally. But what do you need vote-wise in the city of Chicago to, percentage-wise, to make a difference? But because Chance can throw a concert and fill Northerly Island or fill U.S. or Guaranteed Rate, you can do all that. So that's 60... 70,000.
Sure, but if you're under the age of 30, you're not voting. Can you get him fired up?
Maybe.
Or can you get him fired up enough to vote?
I think it depends.
Those are two different things.
It depends on his rhetoric, because I think if he decides to run, he will run, partially based on the millions of dollars that he's given to the Chicago public school system in like very serious endeavors to make things better in Chicago, where, you know, the city has failed in many ways. Chance has stepped up and given his own personal money to to do lots of
didn't things. Have to do that and stepped up.
There was a time 3 years ago when we were talking about a reality star, saying could a reality star be successful in political office?
Absolutely not.
So
it's crazy talk.
We saw that Taylor Swift, when she talked about Tennessee, I think the number ended up being like 61,000 young people went and registered. the night after she said what she said. Right. So they can do.
Yeah. So, I mean, people like to think, oh, I don't want my celebrities. I'm not interested in what my celebrities have to say. But they do have influence.
Yeah, and they're also entitled to their opinion and entitled to
express. They are Americans like anyone else and can say what they want to say. You don't have to pay one bit of attention, but just like, you know, they also have the right to express their opinions.
Make America Vote Again hats are back, and we want you to go out and vote. As a matter of fact, 312-981-7200. Super Joe, let's go. Seventh caller who promises you they'll vote on November 6th. They can select from our wide selection of Make America Vote Again hats. They're all black with white lettering.
Dead relatives call in to get a hat?
Yeah, yeah. You can call in twice. The great Chicago tradition. Thank you, buddy.
See ya.
That's Dean. We're back with more in a moment. That'd be your headlines. Those are next. 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So why on earth should I moan? Because when I get you alone, you know I feel okay.
Dana Olson's here, and we like Dan a lot. Like Dana's work. He was just being fawned over here in studio. For a project we weren't planning on talking about. But what are you doing on Nickelodeon?
So the show is called Henry Danger. We just started our fifth season. I created it and produced the first season. And it's on Saturday nights, I think, still. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yet you're able to wander the street without 11-year-olds hassling you.
Isn't that amazing?
Well played by you.
That's why I like the writing thing. I can remain invisible.
Well, Dana is back from Hollywood. He's in the Chicago area because he is a part of the Studio 5 Film Festival Sundays at the Wilmette Theater.
Actually, it's at the Evanston Dance Center.
Oh, it is. It's not the Wilmette Theater.
Okay. That's where I did most of my dancing.
Evanston Dance Center. And this is interesting because you take different films, you screen the films, and not your screenwriter, and you've written great films in your time, including The Burbs, which is one of my favorites.
Thanks.
And Inspector Gadget. That's the amazing thing to me.
Yep.
You're talking about two different genres.
Yeah.
I think it's an example of your talent.
Well, I did a couple of pictures at Disney. At first, I did Georgia the Jungle. And then they rolled me into Inspector Gadget. I was one of like 15 writers on Inspector Gadget. That was a tough one.
But you wrote the funny parts.
So many questions about that. But you really are a film historian, and that's how you present yourself for this. Where does that come from? What can we expect at the Evanston Dance Center when you screen Hard Day's Night?
So I'll do, you know, a couple of minutes of context and background on the pictures. Hopefully give you some facts about the movies that you weren't aware of. And sort of like what Ben Mankiewicz does on TCM,
yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
And then we just roll the pictures. I'm a real sucker for Sunday afternoon matinees. I think maybe, you know, growing up in Chicago, we had Family Classics with Frazier Thomas.
Sure.
Where I saw for the first time a lot of my favorite pictures. So
the worst thing for you is if your family's trying to get you out of the house, you got the remote in your hand, you're clicking through, and suddenly there's a movie you can't leave.
Yeah, that's right. And often ones that I've seen 15, 20
yeah, of course.
times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You started your career in television. We were just talking about that. How does that work to make a transition as a television producer and writer to a screenwriter?
So my first job was on Laverne and Shirley years and years and years ago. And I think
to work with Bo Caprell?
Pardon me?
To work with Bo Caprell? Remember that guy?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I worked with him on a show on Comedy Central. He did Laverne and Shirley, and I think he almost got the show canceled about 10 minutes before it was a hit.
Oh, really?
So I'm glad you're not friends.
I was there for, I think, the last two of the last three seasons.
And can you get the theme out of your head?
No, I can still do the Schlemiel.
Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Haas and Pepper Corporate.
That's going to be in my head for the rest of the day.
I apologize.
So thanks a lot for that.
I'm sorry.
And then, you know, I picked up a job after two seasons on Laverne and Shirley on a feature film that David Steinberg was directing with the SCTV guys at Universal called Going Berserk.
Yep.
So I got to work with Candy and Joe Flair
and
Gene Levy, and that was a blast. Not a great film, but a really fun experience. and you know, it just kind of started rolling. I think I'm a little ADD, so I tend to get bored. So television is not really hardwired into me. I'd like to change up and do something new after about 12 months. So screenplay writing has kind of been
your home. Bag. Yeah.
When you go back and look at projects, like you said, that film was a lot of fun to work on, but wasn't a great end result. Do you find the ones you had the most fun don't always end up with the best final picture, or are they unrelated?
Nah, they're all kind of fun, and nobody obviously sets out to make a bad movie. It's just sometimes events conspire against you. The Burbs was a blast, maybe the most fun I had. I mean, I got to work with Tom Hanks. I got a Tom Hanks picture in the Pantheon, you know, and he's just, he was fantastic.
Whatever happened to him? Did he work out okay?
You know, I was, when I see him, I always tell him I'm sorry that nothing happened to his career exactly. after The Burbs, and I feel bad about that. No, everybody, you know, you never start out to make a bad movie. It's just, you know, sometimes it just happens that way.
As a screenwriter, and there's so many great stories, miracle stories of people who started their career writing a great movie and moving on, but there's also stories of rough edits and the next draft and not going anywhere, or being in this cycle where you're continually upgrading or updating your own work. How has your career been as a screenwriter? Because you've had the success that a lot of screenwriters have not.
Well, I spent most of my career in development hell, is where they term it. So
explain what development is, because people hear that term all the time, and I don't think they understand what it means.
So it means, so they'll hire me to write a draft of a screenplay with the end goal being make the movie. But a lot of times, you know, they can't get a star, they can't get a director, they're not happy with the script, and they got to spend a lot of money on these things. So they got to either be really sure or be in a position where they can't say no. Because, for example, The Burbs kicked around for a long time, and then Tom Hanks fell into it, and it was like, well, they can't say no. We got Tom. He was coming off of Big, which made him a huge, huge star. So that's how that got rolling. But, I mean, a lot of times I'll spend, you know, a year, 18 months writing four drafts of a screenplay that just never makes it to production.
And development means every aspect of the project and a bunch of meetings.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Meeting after meeting after meeting, and page after page after page, and notes from the studio creative group with air quotes. And you know, and sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Is it as stereotypical or as we know it to be in the Midwest, this idea that there is just kind of like gets grouped to death, that a lot of creative or a lot of people at the top come down and say, what if you made this character wear a dress? Is it
absolutely
that?
Absolutely. I don't know if you guys remember, about 10 years ago, Jim Burrows, who directed, you know, Taxi, and, you know,
whatever happened to him? He worked out okay. Yeah, too, didn't he?
I know, yeah. Right, he came back to direct The Man Who Came to Dinner at, I think, the Goodman, might have been, I think it was the Goodman, and somebody asked him, why did you come back to Chicago to direct a play when you have such a huge television career? And he said, it's because there's nobody in the theater that's going to come up to me and say, does he have to come to dinner?
Ah, nice, nice, nice. Hang around a second. I want to talk more about this. More in just a second on movie historians and movies. A Hard Day's Night and all the other things we're talking about.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
From The Burbs to Henry Danger and back, Dana Olsen's seen an awful lot of Hollywood. And the Hard Day's Night feature on October 21st, 4 o'clock.
Yep.
$10.
Yep.
The Evanston Dance Center.
Yeah, I don't know where that is. I assume in Evanston.
Dempster and Dodge.
Yeah.
Free parking.
Oh, that's key in Evanston. Free parking.
Let me tell you something. Free parking is key by. For me everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's a bar there. You can get a nice little glass of wine I'll before the show if you want. Yeah.
Hard Day's Night. Why'd you pick it?
Aside from being my favorite Beatles movie, one of my favorite movies. It's just so
fun.
Much fun and so delightful. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, it makes me happy. And this is a good time of year to be made happy.
But as a historian, you're going to see things we don't. So what should we watch for?
Well, you know, Richard Lester is credited with basically inventing the MTV style way back in 1964, 17 years before MTV was even really a thing. So you should watch for that. You should watch for the Beatles being such natural, delightful, charming comedians, which is amazing. And, you know, the music is fantastic. And, you know, they just work. I can't believe they didn't make more pictures like this with these guys. I mean, they made Help, but they weren't even on screen enough. And,
yeah, right.
You know, Help.
We got like a minute here, Justin.
As a veteran screenwriter, Hollywood today in 2018, you're seeing a lot of different opportunities when it comes to streaming, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. Does that help screenwriters and writers? Or are they finding more work, or is that just a fallacy?
Well, in the movie business, this has changed tremendously since I came up, and everybody wants to get in long-form television right now. So everybody wants to get, you know, the 10-episode series on Amazon or, you know, Showtime or Netflix. That seems to be the form that everybody's excited about right now. The movie business, if you're not writing a Marvel comic superhero, it's very, very tough to get anything off the ground. So that's changed a lot. And for me, a guy that wrote like sort of middle-of-the-road comedies back in the 80s, that's completely gone away. So I've had to recreate myself a couple of times.
We can maybe write sort of something I call Stream This. There's really no content. It's just called Stream This. I think the kids will like it.
There you go. How long does that take to change? Like you said, if you're not writing a Marvel comic movie right now, you're not in the game. I know we are seeing all those movies in the last few years, but from a screenwriting standpoint, did that start 10 years ago? Or what's the...
I would say 10 to a dozen years ago, you know, sort of after the beginning of the 2000s, I think things started to shift that way. Movies became really, really expensive. And unless you're making a sort of a tiny budget, sort of low-end thing, or a monstrous budget, that sort of middle ground doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, you can have like a lame superhero. It doesn't work that way. You've got to have an actual superhero. Great to see you, Dan Olson.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me. Again, it is Studio5.dance. Is that the best place to go for tickets?
Yeah.
Studio5.dance, and you'll be good to go. And Hard Day's Inn on the 21st. Always nice to see you.
Thanks for being here, and
I hope you like the new studio. Thanks. Minute before 9, 720 WGN.
Now first and goal from the 13, Trubisky over the middle, in traffic, intercepted. T.J. McDonald comes up with the stop.
Just thought safety went with the over route. He made a good play. I lost him when I was stepping up, and I forced one in the red zone when I shouldn't have. So I forced it, and I put my team in a bad position and shouldn't have thrown that pass.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Live from the greatest radio studio in America, if not the planet. 18th floor of 303 East Wacker. You know how good this studio is? I haven't really missed the tower much. And the tower was legendary. I always thought sidewalk studio. Not so much. We got a nice place here. Come by, see us sometime. You can't get up here, but come by. At 9:11 in the morning on CLTV and 720 WGN, it's time to play Stump Adam Hoag. I'm just kidding. But we are going to play it at the end of this segment. So if you have a question about anything other than football and you stump Adam Hoag, you can win. 312-981-7200. Think about it and then call. Good morning, Mr. Hoag.
Good morning, guys. Can't wait.
Adam, that last play, the play that Joe played coming in, the interception in the end zone.
Yeah.
There's so much to break down in this game, and that was a bad throw by Trubisky. But I even watched ESPN yesterday where they were breaking down that the play before that that negated the offensive pass interference that negated the touchdown was a crappy call. That was an offensive pass interference, and once again, the refs got it wrong. Is that the feel you get from watching the tape?
Here's how I feel about that play. I think it was an incredibly touchy call to make. However, I understand why it was made, because Trey Burton kind of dipped his shoulder, and Kiko Alonso did a good job of selling it. And that's not the perfect technique for doing those rub routes where you're trying to get space. And then the other problem there is it wasn't even needed. I mean, Cohen was wide open.
Yeah.
So, look, it was a tough call. But on the list of I thought that was the worst officiated game the Bears have played in this season. I had a whole list of problems of calls that were made in that game. That was like farther down the list because feel like Trey didn't execute it perfectly, and I see why the official threw the flag.
So we talked, I don't know, an hour ago off the air mostly about how hot it was, and Mark Carmen feels that the Bears were hot.
Very hot.
Were the Bears hot? Yeah. Was it hot?
I know people don't want to hear this, but I completely agree. Going back and watching the game, the first thing that breaks down when you're tired is fundamentals.
Yes.
And there's a reason why the tackling got worse and worse and worse as the game went on, including those two big long touchdowns the Dolphins had, Albert Wilson had late in the game. Try to picture in your head what this defense looked like against the Buccaneers, against the Seahawks, and against the Cardinals, and against the Packers in the first half before what happened. They got tired in the second half. This defense has been swarming. They just think about some of these plays. Guys out in space on the on either side horizontally, and the defense, three or four guys swarming to the ball, punching it out, getting to.
Okay, but let me channel Ham for a second. What about conditioning? What about the fact that you're in the National Football League and both guys, both teams are playing in 88 degree weather? What about that?
Well, it's a good question, but one of the two teams practiced in it all week. One of the two teams played a game the week before.
Why didn't the other go to Florida where it was hot? Where's the preparation there?
keep them inside and crank up the heat.
Go to hot yoga.
Right, there you it go, was 45 yoga. Degrees on Wednesday and Thursday in Chicago. Hicks, it was 80 on Tuesday, but they didn't practice. So maybe Hicks, they should have practiced on Tuesday last week.
At the end of the game, Hicks started looking like a beached whale every time after a tackle. He was like flopping on the ground like he looked not like a football player.
It was earlier than the end of the game. It was like, yeah. I mean, he would enter the TV screen, you know, after everybody else is there for 5 seconds. I'm like, dude, what's going on?
Yeah.
So look, I know it's not the best comparison, but in the off season, I play basketball 3 times per week.
No, this is exactly like the NFL. Go ahead.
I'm usually in shape, and there was a day this summer where I got asked to play in a 3-on-3 game outside, and it was 95 degrees. We weren't even playing full court, and I was dying. It's completely different when you're in the sun and it's humid out.
Mm-hmm.
I know people don't want to hear that, but when one team,
dude, I get it. Here's why: if I ride 18 holes in a cart on a golf course, by the time I'm putting out on 18, I'm gonna need a snack. I get it. I totally get it. It's the exact same thing.
All right, Adam, let me ask this, because there's been a lot. We've talked about it yesterday, today, the columnists in Chicago talking about Matt Nagy and whether or not he was innovative in his and as much as risky as he has been advertised in that overtime. When you look at the play calling at the end of that game, with what you just told us, that those players are playing in 88 degree weather and everyone is gasping in overtime, was he too conservative to run the ball and take a long field goal at the end of that game?
I thought he was on 3rd and 4. Now, they were running the ball okay there in that situation, so I understood why he kept going to it. But on 3rd and 4, you can't settle for a 53-yard field goal. You just can't do that. He obviously didn't think that they were just going to get 0 yards and have to kick there. But here's the problem. I heard some national analyst yesterday say something like, well, until Mitch Trubisky makes some play late in the game to win a football game, I'm not going to be a believer. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. He made a lot of really good plays. He carried this defense for most of the game. But the problem is, in overtime, his head coach took the ball out of his hands. So that wasn't his fault. You can't fault him because he didn't have the opportunity to throw the ball late. He should have had the opportunity to throw the ball, especially on 3rd and 4.
Well, you watch this guy every day. Do you believe in him?
I do. He played outstanding the other day. He had 2 really bad decisions. The interception, which cannot happen, and he's going to have to learn from it. The other one was when he threw across his body late in the game. I don't know if you guys remember
that. He got lucky, though.
He got really lucky. But
this guy doesn't want to go to the other way so badly that he's going to throw across his body across the field.
That was a very Jay Cutler-esque throw.
Yeah, it was.
It was bad. But other than those 2 throws, he was really, really good and accurate.
In the second half. In the first half,
you missed that deep throw to Taylor Gabriel, but a lot of that was the offensive line and him not having time to throw the ball. That was the worst half I've seen the offensive line play all season. Okay. So I didn't think he was even that bad in the first half after I went back and watched it. There were a couple misses here and there, but he's got all the tools. He's got a combination of talent and leadership. And obsession, that word that Matt Nagy loves to use, that the Bears quarterbacks have not had in this city. I've covered a lot of them. They just haven't had it. This kid has it.
Carm.
This is what Adam put out a tweet earlier this week. He writes, so at Adam Johns, that's right, Hogan Johns podcast, outstanding work. Some people aren't going to let Trubisky win them over, probably just being stubborn because they can't get over giving up those precious mid-round picks or because they decided he was bad too quickly and don't want to be wrong. It's been liked 658 times and retweeted a zillion times. I just don't get how you're like everyone's jumping to. I'm still in the middle. Like he definitely took a step forward on Sunday. It was a step forward, but he also had the 2 plays late that one of them definitely. I don't think you could argue against it. Cost him the game. So I don't know why you're all the way there is my question.
I'm not all the way there, though. I'm not saying he's definitely going to the Hall of Fame.
Whoa,
that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that he's not bad. There's some people out there that they think he lost the game the other day, that he's the reason why the Bears lost.
Well, that's unfair.
And I've heard it for 48 hours now, and it makes zero sense. I think people just sort of default, and I guess I can't blame him.
Nobody blames the quarterback. You blame the quarterback, yeah. You give the quarterback too much credit.
Especially in this city. That's what I was just getting at. There's been so many bad quarterbacks in this city that they just sort of, I think, default to it when it's not really what's happening in front of you if you watch the game.
All right, what about Khalil Mack?
Well, I'm not really worried about Khalil Mack's ankle.
You like Trubisky better.
Because this summer you played with a bad ankle.
That's
and
right.
So you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No. He played, Carm, you just said it during your update. He played most of the game on it. The problem is sometimes these things get sore after the game. You're able to play through it with adrenaline and taping it up. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's limited in practice this week. But I have to imagine he's going to play Sunday against
the Patriots.
Well,
he played really well coming off of not practicing for a whole preseason. In the first game he played for us, so I'd say not practicing is okay for him.
I watched the game at a GameWorks in Schaumburg at the Woodfield Mall with a bunch of dads who were up by the bar while kids were playing video games. And the reason I bring it up is, as the strangers go, we were all strangers. One thing that made us kind of come together was it was so fun to watch a Bears game like this. It wasn't a game where it was 26-3 or one that there was incompetence all over the field. It was a wild ride, and it was fun to watch, and that's what we expected when Matt Nagy was hired. The optimism here, the positivity, is that you'll take a loss like this.
Yeah, it's hard to take it because it was a really bad loss. There's no question, but it does speak to the fact that, hey, this team is relevant. They're playing relevant, competitive football games, and the Dolphins aren't terrible. You certainly like to think you can beat Brock Osweiler. Unfortunately, the Bears have proven they can't. They're now 0-3 against Brock Osweiler. But it was a competitive football game, and I do think that it is very, very significant that in a game where this defense, which has been carrying the offense for the most part, was straight up bad, Mitch Trubisky in the offense stepped up and started carrying the defense for a big portion of that second half. I think that's a very encouraging sign going forward. And I think every game like this is going to be relevant and competitive the rest of the way. The Bears are still going to have a chance to make the playoffs.
Well, I hope. They're 4-2. Hold on now for a second because we got to come back. They're 3-2 is my point. They could have been 4-1. We'll come back in just a second with more with Adam Hoge. And again, if you want to stump Adam Hoge for prizes, get great prizes. And all you have to do is ask Adam Hoge a question he can't answer about anything other than football. 312-981-7200.
No, not at all. It was hot, but our guys are mentally strong. That tells you they had to play in that too.
This brings back memories. This is a Milt Rosenberg's Extension 720 theme. Remember that?
I do.
I was at a wedding in 2008 where the entire wedding party came out to that song.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that was a jam back in 2008.
A whole Nelly procession.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Hoge is with us. When is the Hoge Johns podcast air? Or available, I should say.
Well, you could still listen to Sunday's postgame episode, but our next one previewing the Patriots game will drop on Thursday around noon.
Speaking of the Patriots, are they going to be ready?
The Bears should be ready. It's an interesting matchup because the Patriots just played the Chiefs, Matt Nagy's former team, similar offense. But on the same token, Matt Nagy can look at that tape and say, well, let's see how they play defense against that offense.
Might have the Adam Gase effect, you know? He played his former team on Sunday and
beat
us, you know? Like, somehow you've got that extra
little Bears seed spread all over the NFL. Carms.
Adam, Brett Veach, Kansas City's general manager, is online one. He wants to trade Patrick Mahomes for Mitchell Trubisky. You in?
Ooh.
I'd take that deal straight up now.
I mean, come on. I can't believe he's hedging.
Steve was calling for that a couple weeks ago.
Exactly. And here's the deal. You also have the bonus that Mahomes sounds like a Sesame Street character. That's good for material.
excellent material.
Adam's not answering.
Adam is not answering.
Because I think everyone, you're guilty of what you just accused me for, Carm. You're making a conclusion way too early.
That's fair.
Patrick Mahomes has played like 7 games now.
But he's
7 games in his NFL career. Where was Deshaun Watson last year?
Games.
7 games in Deshaun Watson's career last year. Everyone was putting him in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. I agree with that.
Guess who's not playing that well this year?
But he got
Deshaun
hurt.
Watson.
He got hurt. He's coming
clearly,
back.
Clearly not as good.
Go
ahead.
No, I just, yeah. I love the Matt Nagy press conferences on Monday. I listen to them because I find everything he says to be, I'm all in when he's describing it to me. You know, I wouldn't have done much different, all that kind of stuff. What's the feel in the room like when you guys adjourn and walk out? Like, is everyone, yeah, this guy has it. We're all on the same.
No, they're all jaded sports writers.
No, there's some validity to that, Mary, because he does give you the idea, at least the confidence, that he knows what he's doing. Where John Fox definitely did not give us that. You're like, really? There was a lot of those moments where you're kind of shaking your head. Same thing with Mark Trestman. Now, I will say he's still talking about this missed field goal like Cody Parkey made it.
Right.
I think someone needs to let him know that the field goal was missed, and it was 53 yards.
We got a bunch of texters saying last night the Packers didn't kick a long field goal. They kept pushing.
That's true.
So
100% agree.
What about Nagy's choices?
Well, I didn't like it. Yeah, I 100% did not like the decision in overtime to run the ball, especially because a missed field goal is a turnover. That's what it is. You're giving the other team the ball if you miss it right there. And that was at midfield, and now they only have to go like 25 yards to kick a field goal, which they did, and they won. So that was my big issue with it there. So I didn't like it.
I don't know. It's Tuesday morning. Not unlike with the Packers game. You just kind of want to move forward. With Tom Brady coming to town, there was so much talk about the ticket price for Tom Brady. Is that still a thing with the Bears' loss, or is there just such anticipation around Chicago and the country to see the Bears play the Patriots?
Well, I think the national attention probably would have been a little bit higher had the Bears been 4-1 and won this game. I will say, though, this is a big game for both teams. I think it's going to be a very, very competitive game. Vegas has only set it at the Patriots as a 3-point favorite. So they think it's going to be close, which I agree with. You know, a lot of people thought this game might be flexed to Sunday night because the NFL did make a change here this week, flexing the 49ers out and putting the Chiefs and Bengals in. The problem was the Patriots are already at their limit for primetime games, and they would have been playing 4 in a row had this one been moved to primetime. So that's why it's being played at noon. It's not in the huge window, but I still think there's going to be a lot of attention on it. And here's the good thing. You lose a game like that Sunday, you know this defense is going to come out highly, highly motivated to prove themselves after what happened in Miami. And I think as long as the offense continues this upward trajectory, which it's on, they're going to have a chance to beat the Patriots. And you do that, and all is forgiven from last week.
All right, bounce back.
You did a nice job of extending out your answers so we don't have time to play a full edition of Stump Hogue. However, I have one question, and if you can
you
answer
caught me.
If you can answer it correctly, you'll win prizes, okay?
Oh.
I have a list in front of me of the most popular Halloween candy in every state in the country. What's number one in Illinois? The most popular Halloween candy in Illinois.
I'm going to say something stupid like Almond Joy.
Almond Joy? There's not a single Almond Joy in the 50 United States.
Tootsie Roll.
Kit Kats. Kit Kats, number one.
Snickers. I was going to say Snickers, too, yeah. Mayor.
Kit Kats, do you want a Snickers? Number one in Arizona.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups?
Snickers, number one in Florida. Reese's, number one in Wyoming.
How did they even know that? They're
number
all
one in
now.
Oregon.
No Mary Janes?
Listen, you and your weed problem are none of our
is
worries.
Is there any independent candy on that list, or is it just all the big five?
Yeah, Boston Baked Beans, come on.
I don't see any.
Because yeah, they're like, sold in those big bags now that's the only candy that you can get.
Yeah, and one for you, Sandberg, in South Dakota, Starburst is number one.
Oh, yes. South Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best candy out there.
How about Bullseyes?
Lemon.
Yeah, right?
Oh, I do like those Bullseyes. They're the best.
Yeah, again, no.
Yeah, I don't.
Adam Hogue, you've won nothing.
Again.
Thank you for being on, buddy.
Thanks, right, Adam.
Have a good day.
See you later.
The thing about those Bullseyes is people forget they like them. You don't know you like. I forget I like them until they're in the newsroom, and then
what
I
are the bullseyes?
Them.
Is that the caramel, thing?
With the white in the middle?
Yeah, no.
I just bought a whole thing at TFS.
No.
Big thing for myself. Mm.
Those are good.
Yeah. I just have bags of kale. Headlines now. Quick break, and we're back with headlines on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Woo-hoo! Orion Samuelson, hello, my friend.
Well, good morning, my friend, and I hope everything is well in your world. It is in mine. You know I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, and I'm still marveling over
that. Right. Now, you are nothing but a punk kid to this lovely lady we have on the phone. There's somebody celebrating a birthday. Oh, I want you to hear her as well as we go to Louise on her 112th birthday. Happy birthday, Louise.
Yes, thank you so much for your contribution.
Well, very nice to talk to you.
I'm not so very good in answering, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a great day. Channel 2 is coming over, and obviously at 112, she doesn't need to have a long talk with me, but we wanted to at least acknowledge
it. Yeah, her granddaughter, Orion, her granddaughter is named Gail. She called us and alerted us to Louise's 112th birthday, and it's significant because she's the oldest person in Illinois.
How about that?
What town do we know?
Oh, you know what? I didn't get the town. It was a 630 number.
No, we're in the Western Burbs.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But
right.
That doesn't matter anymore now, the area codes.
I think what Orion was going for, and I would have thought this as well, is a nice farm girl.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. That I'm not sure. I can't confirm farm girl.
So let's do some math here. Oh, 112 means she was born in 1906, which means she was six when the Titanic went down. I mean, there's some
six
perspective.
Years old.
There's some perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was 39 when World War II ended.
What? She's gone through two world wars and several other regional skirmishes.
Yeah, think about that. In the invention of everything.
I like regional skirmish.
So, crazy. Anyway, happy birthday, Louise. Very nice to talk to her just for a second there. It was nice of her to jump on the phone. Channel 2, you said, bothering
her? Yeah, Channel
2
is coming over to her house at 2 o'clock.
I need that kind of hassle. One of my favorite memories was my grandmother's 100th birthday party. And her her younger brother was 95, I suppose, at that point, 94, 95. And she lived in an assisted living facility where we had the party in their, you know, kind of their dining room area.
Right.
And they got tired. A lot of people there, they got tired. So I have this lasting memory of the two of them walking back to her room. They both had walkers. And they stopped to rest, like in the archway that led down the hallway. It took them about an hour and a half to get that 50 feet. And the backlighting was perfect. It was like, look at that. There's 200 years of history right there.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah, my grandmother lived to be 98, but I think it's because she'd go out into the garden in the summertime and eat a tablespoonful of dirt every day.
I remember you talking about that. Yeah, a lot of iron.
Yes, indeed.
All right, a couple of business questions here on businesses that are coming and going. One is Amazon. I've seen stories in the last 24 hours they're getting close to a decision. Are we still in the running?
Are we still in the running?
Yeah, for the second headquarters.
I haven't heard anything recently. I don't know.
All right, so you know we're not out. And Justin's got one about one leaving.
No, with
not leaving. That's
not
wrong.
Leaving. Yeah, maybe on their way out. Sears. Sears, of course, a longtime fixture in American consumer in everything that we know about stores. And Sears plays a big part in Illinois and the Midwest. What's your thought on what's happening with Sears and possibly going away?
Oh, I think it's very sad because growing up on the farm in Wisconsin, a big event every year was when we'd go to the mailbox and there would be the new Sears catalog in the mailbox. And, you know, we'd go through that. And when I was doing the WGN Barn Dance a few decades ago, one of the funniest, well, probably the funniest person I've ever known, naturally funny, was Donald Red Blanchard. And he was the comic on the Barn Dance, and he would love to tell the story about, the Sears Roebuck catalog came in the mail, and we started going through it. And then when we got back in the house, we decided what we'd order. Because that went to the outhouse. That was toilet tissue back in those days.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, you have to use what you have to use.
Absolutely. And I don't think we could get toilet tissue in our little village in Ontario.
The story that I saw, too, that I thought was interesting is the advent of Sears and the power and impact of Sears in Illinois helped invent the reverse commute because everybody was coming from the burbs to downtown. Sears in the suburbs created the reverse commute and changed kind of the way highways were engineered.
And there was a time when they sold automobiles in the catalog and they sold kit houses. You could buy a kit and build a house.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
So we'll miss it.
It's Orion Samuelson, and I drove by a bunch of cornfields that still had some corn in them. What's going on there?
Well, we are running behind in harvest because we've had a lot of rainy weather. We have 39% of the nation's corn crop harvested and 38% of the soybeans. That's running behind a little bit. But here, Steve, is the fascinating number that I find, because for decades, flying Air Orion back and forth across the Mississippi, it's always interesting to see how the weather changes when you get to the Mississippi.
Sure.
And listen to this. In Illinois, as of Sunday night, 71% of the corn acres had been harvested. In Iowa, on the other side of the Mississippi, only 17% had been harvested.
Wow.
In corn acres. Soybeans, Illinois, 60% harvested as of Sunday. Iowa, 19% harvested. They've been getting rains that are heavier, really, than ours west of the Mississippi. But it always fascinates me, if we're flying from Illinois to Iowa, it'll probably be cloudy and rainy in Illinois, and in Iowa, the sun will break through. It's fascinating weather barrier at the Mississippi.
It's Orion Samuelson, and if you see Orion out on the street, he'd love for you to stop and talk about how he used to milk cows and shoot milk at his barn cats. It's a good story.
Yes. Well, they'd sit on their hind legs, and you could squirt milk.
Yeah, from across the barn. He's still a record holder in that area. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, thank you, and have a good week.
That's Orion Samuelson.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Bill and Wendy coming up.
Chance the Rapper going to make his announcement coming up here, right? Next 10 minutes or so?
You going over there?
No.
Lately,
thing. You're going to cover it live?
Chance! Chance! Who are you going to endorse?
I got about a minute here. There's a new dating app if you support Donald Trump and you're single. It's called Donald Daters. It's a new dating app emerging for people who can't seem to find anyone, because when they have a date and they go out, you make small talk, you eventually start talking about things like politics, and the date's over. Donald Daters, launched on iPhone and Android, a singles community connecting lovers, friends, and Trump supporters alike. Hey, check it out. I won't be. It's 9:55. Bill and Wendy coming up next. 720 WGN. Super Joe playing a little trumpet, showing off.
It's Chance. Chance Rapper.
You didn't know Super Joe played on that track?
I didn't know. No.
Yeah.
I think it's Joey, our kid trumpet of the week. Our kid of the week.
Giovanni.
Was a trumpet player.
Yeah.
Giovanni.
Been a great kid of the week today.
Yeah, we did.
Of course, none of them suck.
No.
You know, they're
true.
All good.
That's
true.
But he's particularly precocious.
So,
can I say something that might sound critical, but it's not?
Last Wednesday.
Notes on the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one note. Okay. Your interview with the 112-year-old woman was great, but it was a little too long.
Felt like it stretched out?
Yes.
Yeah. Not bad. Now, you think about it. In a world of things you have to do today at 112, is talking to me one of them?
No,
I don't think so.
She talked to us like you would talk to a grandson. Like, she came in, she said, thank you, happy birthday, I appreciate it, okay, gotta go.
I'm a very lucky person, please lose the number.
You could hear her playing PlayStation 4 in the background, though, couldn't you?
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. There's a fairly famous story that's, in fact, true, and we all crossed paths at different times in the 90s working at the Loop, the AM Loop, AM 1000, all those stations. And at one point, there was a Titanic survivor that lived in Chicago. It was right around the time the movie came out.
Yeah.
And we had set up an interview with a Titanic survivor on a Friday, and we got busy. And she got bumped to Monday. And she passed that week.
Oh, jeez.
So what's the lesson there, young broadcasters?
Don't
get them while they're
the
high.
Take the call, make the call.
Bump something else.
That's it.
That's a lesson.
Don't bump the older.
I would love to know what segment they did instead
so
of
would
the
I.
Titanic
so would I.
Survivor.
Really would.
I have a feeling Let's just say it wasn't.
What voice funny character bit. Came out?
Right.
We can't lose this one.
It was a John DeCasa. Yeah.
Wow, she's just ripping on John DeCosta.
Yeah, guy's got new knees.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing today?
We're going to talk about urban legends, Steve. Which are true and which are not true.
Give me one. Give me one. I'll tell you if it's true.
Hooked hand.
Hoof hand?
Hook hand.
I don't know that. I know hoof hand.
You don't... tell me the hoof hand one. I don't know that one.
I want to hear the hoof hand.
That's a guy with a hoof on his hand.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. The hook hand, I don't know the hook hand guy. So you're gonna clear these up.
Yeah, tell there's us they're a true. Lot of misconceptions in the world
the
of urban myths.
The hook hand is the one above the car, right?
Like, yeah, the couple that goes out to a make-out point, and they screech away just in time. They hear a report on the radio about a guy with a hooked hand. They screech away.
And
their
hand's hanging on the car.
Yeah. But the hoof hand one is way scarier than that.
I remember staying at a hotel down here, and I woke up in the tub, and my kidneys were gone.
That happened to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Urban legends.
What?
Fake news.
What? See you tomorrow.